There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two, and awaiting the full IG report, I guess the 500 pages, but we're going to work through this, try to see what's out there right now, what may be to come, some response response from the president and others on this day today, which, by the way, the president's birthday today. It's Flag Day. It's the president's birthday. Thank you. I think Jason let us know on the text line. It's National Bourbon Day as well. It's the 43rd birthday of the U.S. Army. A lot of stuff going on this June 14th. Can I add, once again, it's Bourbon Day. So, hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? All right, let's get into it. We'll delve into what we've been deconstructing here. And since earlier this morning, Dalton first pointed out to me a Bloomberg. This is all premature. This is either through leaks or little parts of what has come out. But now former FBI, from Bloomberg.com, former FBI Director James Comey, quote, deviated, end quote, from Bureau and Justice Department procedures in handling the probe into Hillary Clinton. This is one of the things that has already come out today. They said damaging the agency's image of impartiality, even though he wasn't motivated by politics, the department's watchdog found in the highly anticipated report. Quote here, while we did not find that these decisions were the result of political bias on Comey's part, we nevertheless concluded that by departing so clearly and dramatically from FBI and department norms, the decisions negatively impact the perception of the FBI and the department as a fair administrator of justice. End quote. That coming from Inspector General Michael Horowitz, saying in the report's conclusions that were obtained by Bloomberg News. Although the report being sent to Congress today doesn't deal with the origins of the probe into Russia meddling in the 2016 U.S. election and possible collusion with those around President Donald Trump, the president and his Republican allies in Congress were primed to seize on it as evidence of poor judgment and anti-Trump bias within the FBI and the Justice Department. Horowitz examined actions taken by top officials before the 2016 election, including the handling of an investigation into Clinton's use of a private email server. Here we go, y'all, when she was Secretary of State. The inquiry expanded to touch on an array of politically sensitive decisions by officials, including Comey and former Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Okay, once again, the IG's report is saying they find... It almost reminds me, Dalton, it reminded me a little bit of I forget her name, Ellen Brooks, special investigator into Bentley came out and rolled out and now I have not seen the full document yet. None of us around here have. But it seems like, remember when Ellen Brooks came out and said, well, there were a bunch of bad things that happened, but none of them were against the law? Now, here's kind of the flip side of that. There's these things happened, but they weren't politically motivated. Kind of that's what I've been getting so far from reading. Back to the Bloomberg story, some of what Horowitz discovered has already been made public, and President Trump and Republican lawmakers have pounced on those findings in the effort to discredit Comey and, by extension, the investigation now being run by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. In tweets, President Trump has called Comey's investigation into Clinton phony and dishonest, and said that Comey, who he fired May 9th of last year, left the FBI's reputation in tatters. Hogan Gidley, White House spokesman, told reporters Thursday that he hadn't yet seen the IG's report and said, I'm not going to get ahead of any of that. President Trump has expressed great interest in the Inspector General's report, as well as some skepticism it might not be as damning as he hoped. Quote here from the president, what is taking so long with the Inspector General's report on crooked Hillary and slippery James Comey? End quote. Then he goes on to say, numerous delays. Hope report is not being changed and made weaker. There are so many horrible things to tell. The public has a right to know. Transparency. Among topics, end quote. Among topics the IG reviewed was Comey's announcement back in July of 2016. You remember this, that I think it was July 5th of 2016. Because it's my birthday, I remember. Said no prosecutor would find grounds to pursue criminal charges against Clinton for improperly handling classified information on her private email server, as well as Comey's decision to inform Congress then only days before the election that the Clinton investigation was being reopened. Comey's public announcement of the findings angered Republicans, while his reopening of the inquiry outraged Democrats. Brian Fallon, spokesman for Clinton's presidential campaign, said this finding could have been reached the day of Comey's press conference. I can kind of agree with that. He goes on to say it was obvious at the time that Comey was completely deviating from department protocols, and it had a fateful impact on the 2016 campaign and the long-term reputation of the FBI, end quote. Representatives Gerald Nadler and Elijah Cummings, the top Democrats on the House Judiciary and Oversight Committees, said in a statement that the stark conclusion we draw after reviewing this report is that the FBI's actions helped Donald Trump become president, end quote. Republican members of Congress said they wanted to read the report before commenting. That's actually a smart thing to do, right? There's more, though. And this is one of the... Right now, I don't think we have everything yet as they're getting ready to... delve into this in depth with the 500 pages. But once again, this is coming from Bloomberg that said they got a copy of the conclusions from this. I guess the aftertext, right? It says, Republican critics seized on previous revelations from the Inspector General that two FBI officials who worked on Mueller's Russia investigation, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, exchanged text messages sharply critical of Trump. Mueller removed Strzok from the inquiry after the texts were discovered, and Page has since left the FBI. Remember, too, that we also got the fact that they were had a relationship going on there, right? And we got the back and forth of them in the pillow text, or whatever you would call that. One example cited in the new report is an email exchange between Strzok and Page. Think about the date here. This is August 8th of 2016, right? So in the heat of the campaign. Page questioned whether Trump would become president. Strzok replied, no, he's not. We'll stop it, end quote. Pretty interesting. I think you're going to hear that quote a whole bunch here. Horowitz, of course, the IG director of the IG report, said the report issued today in that he said, we did not find documentary or testimonial evidence that improper considerations, including political bias, directly affected the specific investigative actions we reviewed. The conduct by these employees has, he said, therefore, he said, still, though, the conduct of these employees has cast a cloud over the entire FBI investigation. All right, so on my people that have burnt the FBI's name, with J. Edgar Hoover, but you go on after Hoover and here lately, at least according to the IG's report, it's Comey, it's Strzok, it's Page, right? Horowitz once again found a troubling, quote, troubling lack of any direct substantive communication between Comey and Attorney General Lynch ahead of Comey's July 5th press conference on Clinton and his October 28th letter to Congress. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about that meeting on the tarmac, what the IG found about this as we continue. Midday Mobile. Oh, by the way, coming up at 1:32, Bill Finch joins us. Not 1:32, but also after 1:30, Bill Finch joins us. Of course, you know him as host of Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. He's going to talk to us about Gulf summer and hurricane summer, some planting, some trees, and how to be ready for those hurricanes down the road. It's all straight ahead.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 on this Thursday. And by the way, we're on. It's live, and it has been since yesterday, the Summer Better Than Others contest. Your chance for over $5,500 in that grand prize, plus the $50 weekly prizes. This week, your chance to get registered at the Carrot Patch, right there at the corner of Airport and, well, Airport McGregor, across from the Azalea, you know, in other words, the northwest quadrant of the Airport Azalea McGregor Interchange, Pine Brook Shopping Center. Go by and check it out. When you walk in, you'll see the box with the Summer Better Than Other logo on it. You check out what's going on inside the Carrot Patch and drop your name in there. That'll get you qualified, well, get you registered. And then if you get drawn in the next few days, you'll be qualified, win a $50 gift certificate, and be in the running for the grand prize, $5,500 worth of goodies. Then we move the box sometime next week, middle of the week. Got a new place for you to go. We'll be in Baldwin County. We're going to be in Mobile County. And we'll give you many chances to get your name in. One entry per day. And then the grand prize, of course, coming up the third week in July. Details on our website, on our Facebook page, Summer Better Than Others giveaway with FM Talk 106.5. Right, lots to get into, continue to kind of process here. And this is, believe me, I do this for a living. And this is, it's just layer of paint upon layer of paint upon layer of paint. You know, and if you're completely partisan, like I said this morning, you'll see it only one way. If you at least try to look at things and try to detect if there's any factual basis to something, you may have your eyes rolling and your ears ringing by the end of it. But here's one vignette amongst this big book of stories, right, that had a lot of people's attention, mine as well, that meeting that took place on the tarmac. Remember the meeting, the talking about the grandkids? Kinda. Bill Clinton. And then Attorney General Lynch, they're on the tarmac in the plane. Like they told us, right? They were talking about the grandkids. Now, I know many people rolled their eyes on that. And here's what it says further on in this Bloomberg story that is reacting to what they had. And by the way, the document is out. Dalton, I saw it pop up like 26 seconds ago on Twitter that the full document's out. There's no way we're going to be able to digest that before we finish up. But by tomorrow morning, maybe we can get some ideas what happens in those 500 pages. But on to the Bloomberg account from Bloomberg.com. Horowitz, back to Horowitz, who the IG, right? He's running this investigation. Horowitz found a, quote, troubling lack of any direct substantive communication between Comey and Attorney General Lynch ahead of Comey's July 5th press conference on Clinton and his October 28th letter to Congress. He went on to say, we found it extraordinary that in advance of two such consequential decisions, the FBI director decided the best course of conduct was not to speak directly and substantively with the Attorney General about how best to navigate those decisions, end quote. And Dalton's joining me in studio here as well. I know, I mean, there's no way. I just saw the link pop up for it for the full report.
538 pages.
Page Turner.
And Washington Post, and I know you say that name, a lot of people, they shut their ears down real quick. But Washington Post seems to have the, I mean, I don't know how they got this out there unless they, too, had a version of the 538-page report to start reading.
Well, it's because Washington is leakier than that darn boat with the screen door in the bottom before they flex seal it.
And I mean, that's, you know. Trump and Congress were supposed to have received this report early, way earlier than the public. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to receive it earlier today. But it found some, I mean, the Washington Post has a pretty good write-up. Earlier you were talking about Peter Strzok's test.
The text. Yeah, the text. We know that Strzok and Page were texting back and forth, but I guess specifically they pointed out an email here. The one that, I mean, I gotta tell you, the language in there, you know, I mean, people say, well, that may be out of context. I don't know how you take that one out of context where he says, we'll stop him.
Yeah, and it's interesting that those texts were included in a report that concludes that it was an unbiased investigation. But the report's actual wording on that Strzok text, because that leaked early about the Strzok text to Page where he said, what was it? He said, no, we'll stop it. No, he won't. We'll stop it. The report says that those texts were not only indicative of a biased state of mind, but even more seriously implies a willingness to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral prospects. The messages, quote, potentially indicated or created the appearance that investigative decisions were impacted by bias or improper considerations. So that's some of the writing on the Strzok texts with Page.
I mean, who knows if Strzok had the, but you're going to have to go out, to be a fair consumer of this, you'll have to ask, did Strzok have any power to actually do anything? But if you're asking if there's bias inside the department, that's as active of a verb as you get, you know. I mean, it's not like he's just making a statement of fact, saying we'll, like he and I can only assume others within the federal government, the FBI, are going to stop it.
Yeah. And
how they're going to stop it, that's it.
that's the question. And another part of this report, speaking about the Clinton's email server once FBI officials began investigating that. The report questions why they were so slowly moving on that investigation. It says by no later than September 29th, the Inspector General alleged that the Bureau had learned, quote, virtually every fact that it would cite as justification late the next month to search Anthony Weiner's laptop for messages of Clinton and top aide Huma Abedin. Says the Inspector General derided the Bureau's reasons for not moving more quickly, that agents were waiting for additional information from New York, that they couldn't move without a warrant, and that investigators were more focused on the Russia case as, quote, unpersuasive, quote, illogical, and inconsistent with their assertion that they would leave no stone unturned on Clinton. That's another major part of this report, that the FBI investigators, even though they had virtually every fact they needed, that they waited so long to truly begin this investigation. Also faulted the Bureau for assigning essentially the same personnel to the Russia and the Clinton teams. And the report even singles out Strzok, suggesting what we just talked about, his anti-Trump views might have played a role in his not acting more expeditiously on the new Clinton email lead.
That's how he'll stop it, maybe. Hey, but okay, and I want to finish up, too, a little bit about that tarmac meeting. In the IG's report, said it found it extraordinary in advance of two such consequential decisions. The FBI director decided that the best course of conduct was not to speak directly and substantively with the attorney general about how to best navigate those decisions. Goes on to say in the Bloomberg story, Lynch had announced that she would go along with whatever Comey recommended in regard to Clinton. In the Clinton case, although she didn't formally recuse herself. Remember that? Lynch had come under heated criticism for agreeing to meet with former President Bill Clinton in June of 2016 on her plane while it was sitting on a tarmac in Phoenix. Two sides said they didn't discuss anything related to the investigation. That was they were talking about grandkids or something, right, for all that time. The Inspector General released a report in April finding the FBI Director Andrew McCabe lacked candor on four different occasions regarding interactions with the media, including providing information to a news reporter about the FBI investigation into the foundation created by Hillary and Bill Clinton. The IG has referred that matter to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia for further investigation.
Wow. And I guess
there's a takeaway, huh?
Yeah. And I'm still having trouble with that conclusion. It concludes that Comey didn't do a very good job of his investigation, but that it was still unbiased. And I think a major part of that is because when Comey made that announcement that they were investigating the Hillary Clinton campaign because of those email servers, they're putting a huge part of this because Comey did not tell Loretta Lynch prior to announcing this investigation that's a reason why they're considering this unbiased, because he did not know that was part of
prior knowledge.
Knowledge. Another part of this that you mentioned, those Strzok texts, that I think will be talked about a lot. But this here, this is one of the latest findings that's going to be huge, and it's ironic. Deliciously ironic. The report determined that several FBI investigators, including Comey, also broke Bureau protocol by using personal email accounts for official government business. Says the inspector found five instances in which Comey either drafted official messages on or forwarded emails to his personal account, which I'm seeing elsewhere that this was a Gmail account, and that at least two instances in which Strzok used his personal email for official business, including one, quote, most troubling instance on October 29th, 2016, when Strzok forwarded an email about the proposed search warrant the mid-year term was seeking on the Weiner laptop, and that was from his FBI account he forwarded to his personal email. Washington Post goes on to say the discovery is ironic, of course, given that the FBI was exploring Clinton's own use of the personal email.
They couldn't see themselves doing that at that time and go, wait a second, I'm investigating improper use of email. Maybe I ought to not do this.
Right.
I don't know.
You'd think the one thing they would try not to do is use personal email when that's what they're investigating.
When they're investigating somebody using personal email. Listen, we've got just barely scraping the top of this. We've got the 538 pages. Look through. Of course, we'll be talking about that more tomorrow on Mobile Mornings and on this show, Midday Mobile, tomorrow. All right, coming back after the break, our buddy Bill Finch joins me. Time to talk about some Gulf summer, hurricane summer. What does that all mean? Well, he'll explain when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, as promised. My buddy, host of Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. Catch the podcast, catch the replays. I mean, we make it, you pretty much gotta hide to not check out the show, or you can just listen to him right now. It's Bill Finch joining us on Midday Mobile. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you, Sean?
I'm good, and I rang you up today, actually texted you up today, because watching the weather over the last 3 or 4 days, maybe even more, most of this week, and talking to Dr. Bill Williams, you know, about the pattern we're in, and while some people call this, you know, up in Boston or something, oh, we're still in the late days of spring, I said, uh-uh. Here at home, Bill has taught me that what I see around me, whatever the date is, what I see around me, this is Gulf summer, right?
Right. Well, you know, it's important to know that there are three summers in Mobile. They're all very distinctive. And the first one started back in April 15th or so. And we like to call that American summer because it's kind of typical summer weather for most of the continent. It's like summer in Michigan, summer in Ohio. Hot days, cool nights, not as much rain. Rain's a little sporadic. About June 15th, it typically flips over to Gulf summer, which is a kind of summer that people only on the Gulf experience, really. It's rain every day. Daytime temperatures aren't that high, but usually in the upper 80s, but nighttime temperatures don't fall. So the nighttime temperatures stay very high, except this year... This year, it felt like it started early, didn't it? Felt like Gulf summer started back in early June. You know, it doesn't seem to... One of the interesting things about Gulf summer is that it's a very local kind of thing. It's really about things happening on the edge of the bay and the Gulf, where cooler air from the water meets warmer air from the land, and you get all of these weird patterns of temperature inversions that cause rainfall to occur locally, and that's why we have rain every day during Gulf summer. But this stuff during June really isn't about us. It was really about something happening on the continent, I think. And mm-hmm. So we got a little taste of Gulf summer maybe earlier than I might like. I like a little bit of dry weather.
June. You know, I do too. And number one, I just like it in general. And for things, I mean, it's self-serving. I like it because the water clears up for freshwater and saltwater fishing. So it's a good thing there. Right. You get that dry pattern. But also, you've taught me over time what it means for different things that people are growing in their gardens too. That the dry is a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. You know, we forget how important fluctuating moisture levels are to the flavor of things. If you want good honeydew melons or cantaloupes or watermelons, you need this dry period. You have to have this dry period in late June, and we didn't have it. So I don't know that the honeydews are going to be all that great this year here along the Gulf Coast. Tomatoes, you know, tomato flavor is often driven by little periods of dry weather. It begins to concentrate sugar as you get more sunlight. The sunlight itself is pretty important. And all those things affect tomato flavors. So, you know, with this much rain coming in late June, we're going to see more diseases. We're going to see high night temperatures, which means you're going to see fewer tomatoes setting fruit. And then finally, we're going to see less tomato flavor, which is, generally speaking, which is Too bad.
Yeah, or even worse, well, probably not worse than losing the flavor, but you pointed out over time, too, you let your tomatoes get so much water they can, and you put it in some parlance that folks like me can understand, they split their britches.
That's right, they split their britches. And certainly they do. And these, particularly when we get fluctuating moisture levels, when we go from very dry weather to very wet weather, they will absolutely split their britches. And so you get all kind of problems with tomatoes when it stays this wet over a long period of time. But you know, it's it's what we got. We're going to do the best that we can. On the other hand, things like peppers have done really well. My eggplants are coming on really well. The okra is doing really well. A lot of these Gulf summer vegetables are already beginning to kick in a big way.
Now, this makes okra happy, right? I mean, bring it on for okra, right?
Yeah, and okra is really a versatile vegetable. If it gets a little bit of moisture to get started, and then it prefers, I think, a little more sunlight during the day. But it'll adapt to both drought and moisture.
Okay.
The one thing that okra needs is high night temperatures, and it's getting it. So I used to say one of the reasons I left the mountains of North Carolina is because I couldn't grow okra there, because the nights would stay so cool. It'd stay in the 50s and lower 60s, and okra just hated that. But, man, it loves it when it gets up into the 70s. So the okra is doing really, really well right now because of these high night temperatures.
So, and like you said, tomatoes and some things that we should have planted way, way back, and hopefully you're getting the majority of your harvest now because it's now not time for it, but you're going to tell us about the second planting of those. But you have over time, you mentioned melons and how, you know, this extra rainy situation can lead to not so much of the sugar content or flavor content, but you also said it's probably a good time to start watermelons. Now, that is contrary to what people think. That's against what the big box stores tell them is happening.
Right. Well, I talk about having a second crop of melons that develops during October when the temperatures are fairly low. And when the temperatures begin to decline and when the moisture levels begin to decline in late September and October. And most years you could do pretty well. There are some hazards that you run into getting those melons through midsummer. But I would say about the last week in June is a really good time to start, for example, longer season crops like watermelons. And we've often had very good success having very tasty melons in fall by doing that second crop in late June. Same for tomatoes. Older tomatoes are very susceptible to diseases in July and August. But if you can get some young tomatoes, put them out in late June, early July, really early July for the tomatoes. They'll often grow right through the real disease-prone period without a lot of problems. And then September, October, as the nights cool off and as we get less rainfall, boy, those tomatoes can really develop some very nice flavors.
Yeah, this is one of the ideas, like having three summers. I want to get into the next summer in a second, having three summers, we also have multiple chances to have crops. I mean, our seasons, this idea of lining up, you've taught us over time, like the one harvest season, that is not what we're about on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, every month is a spring planting month. I mean, we have a new spring every month, and you can plant virtually every month and should if you're going to really take advantage of this climate. You plant different things each time, but there's not one spring planting here. There's 12 of them, really.
And so with that, I mean, so if you were right now, you've just laid out a couple for us. If, you're coming over to the house and we say, hey, Bill, what do I need to put in the garden right now? Here it is. It's going to be the second half of June going forward to Independence Day, somewhere in there. You're saying tomatoes, watermelons, what else?
Yes, certainly you could try. Tomatoes and watermelons are great. If you haven't planted any eggplants, man, this is a great time to plant eggplants. It's a great time to plant peppers. You're going to have plenty of time to develop the peppers. It's a great time to plant butter beans, particularly pole butter beans, which are the best kind of butter beans anyway. They actually grow like crazy during summer, but they don't really produce well until fall. So don't waste a lot of time growing them out to huge sizes. Plant them now. In fact, I'm just now planting my butter beans. Plant them now. Let them grow through the summer. They're going to produce great in fall. So butter beans are another great crop you can try right now as well. Peas. Oh, don't get me started, Sean. I mean, peas, southern peas, what a great crop. Whippoorwills, one of the great old peas of the South. There's so many good southern peas, and we've nearly forgotten about them. Pink-eyed purple hull. Don't waste your time on those black-eyed peas at the grocery store. Get real southern peas.
Yeah, and you mentioned, okay, so Pink Eye, Purple Hole, I know those, but you mentioned Whippoorwill.
Whippoorwill.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. Tell me Whippoorwill.
You know, how long have you got, Sean? You know, here's the great thing.
We got a news break in a minute, but yeah, go ahead.
Here's the great thing. In the South, almost every family had their own strain of peas. There were so many. If you go back to the 30s and 40s, when people still had real gardens, people still were feeding themselves out of their gardens. Mm-hmm. There were so many varieties of peas that we've forgotten. Pea varieties like Red Ripper and Whippoorwill and Black Whippoorwill and Paget's pea and the Red Sea Island pea. They were all different, and they all had different flavors. Pink Eye Purple Hull and Mississippi Silver, and I could go on and on.
Let's do this. We'll run to the break and come back, because I've got one of those that I love that not many people have heard of, but maybe people listening up near Andalusia know what I'm talking about. Cream eights, like the number eight. If you got some cream eights,
yeah, that's right.
I will pay a king's ransom for a bag of cream eights. Coming right back, Bill Finch. Plain Gardening. Of course, you hear Plain Gardening on the Gulf Coast on Sunday mornings, but we're getting to hang out with them today, which is pretty cool. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right. Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, and continuing our conversation with my buddy, Bill Finch, host of Plain Gardening on the Gulf Coast. Catch the show 9 o'clock Sunday mornings. Of course, a podcast available of last week's show right now. Catch replays on Sunday as well, and the podcast anytime. And get to talk about, oh, you know what? Something we talked about, Bill, during the news break here, and you shocked me. You said, because we're in kind of a pea discussion there, and I do like some of these strains you mentioned, and some of them I'm sure I like. I just haven't had them yet. But you mentioned black-eyed peas, southern staple, right? You said no.
No, absolutely not.
What do you mean?
It's a grocery store staple. It's a company store staple. Black-eyed peas were never grown in the South. They were just not grown here. I mean, we had so many other strains, but when you go back looking through old books, nobody was growing black-eyed pea. Black-eyed pea was a pea that was a particular strain. In fact, if you buy your package now, you'll see on the package it says California black-eyed peas.
California?
It was a strain of pea that grew well in California in dry climate. And we use it because we don't have gardens. We quit having gardens. We quit being Southerners. We lost all those great Southern flavors. And the only thing the company store and the grocery store had were these California black-eyed peas. And they were a pretty poor substitute. In fact, they don't really have that flavor you talk about with things like cream eight, mm-hmm. which are really great. They don't have those great flavors, but it's all they had. So, you know, I wrote a column about that that's coming up this weekend. It sort of talks about how the grocery store has determined what we eat and has determined what Southern cooking is, which is really too bad because we've lost contact with the real flavors of Southern cooking because we've let the grocery store dictate what it is we eat.
Well, but we need to take it back. I mean, that's what you're doing on Sunday mornings here and helping people do it. Although I will say, I think there's some light. I think there's some hope here and I may be even a little older than the bigger foodie movement out there. I'm in my mid-40s, but people my age I see getting into gardening that never had gardened before, or, you know, maybe their grandparents did. I do see people coming back to it. Maybe, you know, like everything comes, like fashion, comes back around.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So people say to me, you know, what's a real Southern vegetable that I can grow in my garden? And I say to them, real Southern flavor is whatever grows in your garden. So if it's growing there and it's doing well, that's a Southern dish. Don't reject it because you didn't find it on the grocery store shelves. That's not a good measure of Southern food.
Now, speaking of which, I listen with much interest, but also heaps of ignorance when you and there's somebody who calls in quite regularly about it, about Merlot. Is it Merloton? Because I've seen it in the store. I've seen it in Rouse's in the past, but I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, Melloton.
Melloton. That's it, Melloton. I can't even pronounce it.
Pronunciation. It's the poor pronunciation of the of the old Gulf Coast vegetable, sometimes called alligator pear or chayote or coyote, however you want to pronounce it. It's a type of, it's not really related to anything else. It kind of sits over there by itself. Sakium vulgare is the Latin name. It's a Central American Gulf Coast vegetable. It's been around for a long time. It's grown in New Orleans. It's grown along here on the Gulf Coast. People up in Birmingham, and they don't know what it is. They didn't grow it up here because it only produces its fruits during the short days in November and December, and by that time, you can't garden in Birmingham. So it's always been a sort of a Gulf Coast niche crop, a really delicious thing. We can talk about it this time of year, but really the time that it really rolls in is October, November, December. If you can find the starts of it now, it's not too late to plant it. And we're working to get good Gulf Coast strains. We should be able to make those available next year, and I'm hopeful through the botanical gardens. I know John Hollett's working on it at Auburn to get these good Gulf Coast strains of Melaton and make sure that people have this great crop, which is a really great vegetable to use, particularly during the winter. Really very traditional Gulf Coast plant.
Hey, Bill, before we run out of time here, I want to talk about something else we're growing at our house, or a lot of us have growing around our house. And as we, right now, you said in Gulf summer, but the next summer we have here is called what?
Yeah, well, what do you think? It's when our weather is dictated by tropical weather coming out of the Caribbean and out of off the coast of Africa. It's why we call it hurricane summer. You know, we used to have flowers here on the Gulf Coast. We talked about hurricane lilies.
Yep.
Because they bloomed during the season that I call hurricane summer. It really starts about mid-August and goes through mid-October. It's the peak of hurricane season, peak of tropical storm season. No guarantee we'll have a hurricane, but a pretty good guarantee we'll have a number of tropical systems moving into the Gulf Coast. It will be drier generally until those tropical fronts bring the rain in. The temperatures will fluctuate more than they do during Gulf summer. Some days they'll be very hot, and some days it'll be amazingly cool, but a great transitional season and a very important time for planting in the garden. One of the most important times, it's when you get all of your winter vegetables and cool season vegetables going. You get your kale started. That's a busy season. We got to get ready for it.
Yeah, but also the planting, well, we didn't plant them in a lot of cases. Sometimes we did. But the trees around our house, this is something that you've talked about with us in the past. If somebody's doing a stroll through the yard here and making an accounting of those things that may fall onto their roof, Bill, kind of walk us through some do's and don'ts of what you like and don't like.
Yeah. Well, one thing is for any tree that the limbs get too big for their britches. If a limb coming out of the side of a tree is bigger around, or is half as big around as the trunk it emerges from,
mm-hmm.
it's probably too big, and it's getting to the point that it's going to shear off very well. Live oaks, it's a little different, but for most other trees, if you see these big limbs that have gotten that are half the size of the trunk or larger, you need to worry about those limbs because they're going to lever off of the trunk very easily. That's one of the first things we look out for. The other thing we look out for are certain types of trees that are very prone to rot. So we always like to say on the Gulf Coast, I don't remember who first came up with this phrase. I adopted it years ago because it's so good. Water oaks, they spend 25 years growing and 25 years dying. And what that means is these water oaks that, if you've got a water oak of any size, it's already on the way out. And it is very prone to rot here on the Gulf Coast. So rot can run through it. Much of the damage we see from trees, from hurricanes, just period, is from water oak trees. If we didn't have water oaks and laurel oaks, so commonly in Mobile, I would say we would probably reduce hurricane damage by an enormous percentage. So water oaks and laurel oaks are very dangerous trees to have around the house because they're so prone to rot. So that's the second thing to look out for.
Yeah, that is absolutely something to take into account. That's why I wanted to bring that up. As people walk around and look, if you're thinking about upcoming hurricane summer, as you get ready for it, maybe some trees need to come down. I know you'll talk more about this on Sunday during plain gardening, and people can check it out then. And, Bill, if somebody wants to, the pictures, I'd love to come in here on a Monday morning and see all the pictures that hit the text line. Yeah. But people can send those in early, too. You request, if somebody's asking you a question, to send you a pic.
That's right. You know, if you've got a question, for example, about a tree in your yard and whether it's healthy, we'll do a good job of taking some pictures on your phone, and you can simply text them, just like you text a message. You can text them to the radio station, mm-hmm. and we can look at them on our little program that we have, Zipweb program. And so just text it to 343-0106. That's simple, isn't it? Just text that picture. I can take a look at it. You can answer me a question about it. And we'll do our best.
It's great stuff, and I appreciate it too, because when I come in, like I said, on Monday mornings, I get to look at all the cool pictures from a Sunday show. So there's an added benefit. Bill, as always, I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon, and I'll be listening on Sunday.
All right.